You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek yesterday urged Eugene residents to remain peaceful after Friday's protest prompted a riot declaration. KLCC's Zach Ziegler reports both Friday and Saturday nights, federal officers deployed tear gas and other chemical agents on protesters.
Kotek spoke along with other elected officials in Eugene. She voiced her support and said President Donald Trump is targeting communities that oppose his views.
That is un-American, it's undemocratic, and what we can do to protect ourselves is peaceful protest.
Eugene Mayor Karen Knutson reiterated that message.
My understanding is we now have more federal presence in this community. So the importance of peaceful protest, that's the main message of today.
Friday's events got the attention of the president, who mentioned Eugene in a Truth Social post. Trump suggested he would not send more law enforcement into cities unless asked. Kotek and Knutson said they will not make such a request. I'm Zach Ziegler reporting.
Eugene area Congressional Representative Val Hoyle says Trump's recent mention of Eugene on Truth Social puts a target on the city.
Let's understand what the code was in that message, which is, Eugene, that's your target.
Trump spoke of the city in a 450-word Truth Social post that names Eugene and alleged protesters caused, quote, great damage to the federal building and harassed federal employees. Hoyle spoke to reporters before traveling to Washington, D.C. for a vote on the federal budget. She said she will vote no on the funding bill that covers the Department of Homeland Security. And Trump has again energized Democrats in Oregon's only Republican congressional district. Jefferson Public Radio's Roman Battaglia went to a town hall in Medford.
Five Democratic candidates are running for the seat now held by Republican Cliff Bentz. District 2 is one of the largest in the country and covers southern and eastern Oregon. The candidates have been holding town halls to promote their campaigns. Rebecca Mueller, a pediatrician in Medford, says Democrats need to switch things up if they want to win this deep red district.
We have had decades of the same speeches, of the same talking points, and yet, every cycle, we point the finger at the other guy and less gets done.
Democrats were closest to taking the district during Trump's first term in 2018, when Jamie McLeod Skinner got almost 40% of the vote. This year, candidates hope to capitalize on public outrage over immigration enforcement and the affordability crisis. Oregon's primary is May 19th. I'm Roman Battaglia in Medford.
This is KMUN News. I'm Skylar Butenchin. The federal government is increasing the amount of logging revenue shared with Oregon counties. As Jefferson Public Radio's Justin Higginbottom reports, local governments welcome the bump in funding.
Oregon counties will now receive 75% of the logging revenue from federally managed ONC land within their borders. The change, up from a 50% split, comes from the Department of the Interior's latest appropriation bill. Coos County Commissioner Rod Taylor says the county can use the extra revenue.
We are in desperate straits, and we have nowhere to cut. Last year, we had to cut a position from our clerk. We had to cut a position from our land surveyor. We had to close half of the jail.
The federal government sent Coos County nearly $2 million in timber revenue last year. The Association of ONC Counties says this change will bring a 50% increase in funds annually. I'm Justin Higginbottom in Ashland.
Forestry officials are finalizing a guide to logging and conservation in western Oregon forests. OPB's April Ehrlich reports.
The Oregon Department of Forestry has drafted a plan for managing state forests west of the Cascades. That plan is expected to guide the agency's logging and conservation policies for up to 70 years. But environmental groups say this draft plan is too vague. They want more specifics on how the agency will protect mature and complex forests. Grace Brawler is the wildlands director at Cascadia Wildlands, a nonprofit in Eugene.
A lot of the drinking water that Oregonians get flows through these forests. They have the ability to store carbon and really be an effective fight against climate change.
Forestry officials say they drafted this plan in broad strokes so it can last decades. It would apply to about 640,000 acres of state forests, including the Tillamook, Clatsop, and Santiam state forests. I'm April Ehrlich reporting.
federal officials have approved a gold and silver mine in central eastern Oregon. The Grassy Mountain gold mine still needs to get state permits before moving ahead. If approved, it would become Oregon's first modern-day gold mine. Federal officials announced the approval Thursday afternoon, hours ahead of a state public hearing about the project. The mine would be located outside Vail in Malheur County. It would use chemicals to dissolve gold and silver from ore. Federal officials fast-tracked the project as part of President Donald Trump's goal to increase mining in the U.S. Oregon's high school graduation rate for the class of 2025 has hit 83%, a record high. As Elizabeth Miller reports, the increase is helped by improvements for numerous groups of students.
The state's migrant students, students with disabilities, and American Indian Alaska Native students all posted their highest graduation rates ever recorded. Oregon Department of Education Deputy Director of Academics, Candace Castillo, said it's up to schools and the state to step in and close the gaps that remain between some student groups.
When outcomes differ across different groups, we don't see that as a reflection of students' potential. We see it as a signal about the opportunities and supports our system has to provide.
Oregon's highest graduation rate for any student group is 98%. That's for the 14,000 students who completed at least 2 credits in a career technical education program. While 83% is high for Oregon, it's lower than most other states based on their most recent graduation figures. Elizabeth Miller, reporting.
This is local and regional news on KMUN. Turning now to news out of Washington State, here's Skylar Butenshin.
Washington tribes could get a bigger voice in state natural resource decisions. A bill heard in the state legislature last week would add a tribal seat to the 6-person board. Josh Weiss with the North Olympic Legislative Alliance says his organization isn't opposed to tribal representation.
But we do feel it's important that the representative come from one of the tribal nations who actively manage their own commercial forests or milling operations.
A Washington Association of Counties representative also raised concerns that adding a tribal member might divert the board from prioritizing revenue state trust lands generate for counties. Tribes, including the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation, say they've managed these lands for thousands of years and already work well with the state to do so. Lands Commissioner Dave Updegrove says the bill's language right now leaves a lot of discretion for the governor to choose from tribes' nominees.
If I were governor, I would maybe rotate between East and West over time. And, you know, I think those kinds of decisions are made during appointment processes for all kinds of positions all the time, looking at the historic composition. But the bill itself doesn't specify beyond a federally recognized tribe in Washington state.
The board already contains the lands commissioner, as well as representatives for counties, the governor, the state superintendent, and 2 state university forestry schools.
This is local and regional news on KMUN. Spokane's West Central Abbey has been a central fixture in its neighborhood for more than a century. It's gone through phases of use, neglect, and revitalization. The abbey serves its neighborhood well, but for one basic function. That is on its way to being addressed thanks to a grant from the National Fund for Sacred Places. But first, the Abbey has to raise its own funds to match that grant. So it's asking for the help of local artists, either secular or sacred, who have drawn upon the church for their own work. Spokane Public Radio's Eliza Billingham reports.
Jess Walter's latest novel, So Far Gone, is about estranged grandfather Reese Kinnick reuniting with his grandchildren. In this scene that Walter reads, Reese takes his grandson Asher to a chess tournament.
The chess tournament, according to Mrs. Gaines, was being held at an old abbey in West Central Spokane, the city's oldest working-class neighborhood. The Spokane Chess Club met in this 19th-century Episcopal church, a barn-red steepled church building with an abbot's house attached. A sign out front read, "We cultivate justice, joy, compassion, and peace." There were only 4 cars in the gravel parking lot, a few more on the street. Reese parked and turned back to consider his grandson. "You ready to go get him, Kasparov?" Asher looked up from his paper and notebook, suddenly seeming panicked. I have to pee. I'm sure there's a bathroom in there. I hope so.
How did you find out that the Abbey doesn't actually have a bathroom inside?
Well, Katie Shedlock reached out to me and asked if I would help in this fundraising effort to try to put a bathroom in the Abbey. So until that point, I just sort of assumed there was one. I've lived in West Central for 22 years and walked by that beautiful building on my way to second breakfast most days. And so I suppose I should have done a little more research, but I think it's kind of, it speaks to my my abilities as an author that I think it would be easier to raise money to put a bathroom in the Abbey than to go change a sentence in my book.
To be fair to Walter, the Abbey technically does have a bathroom, but it's not inside the Abbey. It's in the parish hall next door and requires a walk outside to get to it. The caretakers of the Abbey hope that's about to change. West Central Abbey was the second church in Washington to receive a grant from the National Trust of Sacred Places. That's $50,000 to keep the building usable. To Reverend Katie Shedlock, that means a bathroom in the same building as the sanctuary. And there should be enough money to replace the cedar shingles that are falling off the roof, too. The grant is a matching grant. The Abbey got news of the award in 2024, but it needs to raise its own $50,000 first. So Shedlock asked three West Central writers who have been inspired in some way by the old church to host a reading. They'll hold that reading next week, and all proceeds from that will go towards matching the grant. But what is it about the Abbey that has captured both local and national attention?
The National Fund for Sacred Places, they really look for what I think can be kind of a unique blend of they want really cool historic buildings and they want churches that are really committed to serving their communities.
Shedlock says the Abbey is actually a Gothic chapel with some original stained glass windows and others that were painted in the 1970s.
The colors are really vivid and vibrant, and the lighting in the space is pretty low, and especially as you're coming in from outside, you know, you kind of adjust to the light.
As your eyes adjust, you can see huge wood beams curve up to a vaulted ceiling.
People almost always look up when they come in the door. People almost always, their shoulders kind of drop, which I think is about putting down whatever burdens that we have.
Though the space has an ancient feel, the church's mission is progressive. Parishioners give out Narcan at free Wednesday night meals. The sanctuary pews circle around a wobbly communion table instead of facing the high altar. And its hymnal includes Be Thou My Vision and Brandy Carlile.
We've done free funerals for people from our dinner table community who wouldn't have otherwise had a beautiful space in which to say goodbye.
Even though West Central is built on a grid, Dean Avenue takes an unexpected curve around the Abbey. The red building kind of juts out into the pavement. Shedlock says that's what first earned the Abbey its nickname, Church in the Streets.
I love that image of the church in the streets. I think a way that connects to our congregation now is we have a lot of people who are deeply passionate about social justice, people who are willing to go protest for things that they believe in.
And for our detail-oriented listeners, no, this isn't actually an abbey.
So an abbey, historically speaking, is a place where people who have taken vows of living together in religious community would live and work. We are not an abbey in that traditional sense, but we have some things that we do hold in common with abbeys of the past. One is that we have this big giant garden, and agricultural life was often a part of monastic work and life together. We have lots of really creative folks who are people who practice the arts in lots of different ways.
There's even a banner above the doorway that encourages whoever is leaving the sanctuary to go live creatively.
English novelist David Jones describes creativity, basically art making, as the surest sign of our own createdness.
Tom Caraway is a Whitworth professor, a book printer, an author, and a poet. He's one of the writers who will read at the fundraising event, and he gives entire lectures on the overlap of sacredness and creativity.
You don't need to make art. We must make art, right? Our souls demand it. And so why is that? And I think it's because, like, that is that creativity is the expression, the outer expression of our own inner sacredness. And you can call it whatever you want in different people from different spiritual backgrounds or different belief systems or without belief systems at all.
But what makes a place sacred?
I probably have a much more working class idea of sacred spaces.
That's Jess Walter again.
I grew up next to a drive-in movie theater, which was a little bit sacred to me. Anytime I go by a basketball court in the middle of a city, that's kind of a sacred place for me. Every library branch to me speaks of the sacred. And so, you know, I think there are a lot of different places where we transcend the everyday and the regular.
He says church services never really did that for him. Same goes for Lena Crow, an author, creative writing prof, and West Central resident who will also read at the fundraiser.
I don't think about sacredness, but I like the notion of it. And I would say, you know, as a person who's more connected to the arts than I am to, I think, conventional notions of religion, that art does feel sacred. You know, I guess I would think of sacredness as something that's essential in a very core way, either on an individual level or a community level.
And do you think the neighborhood would lose anything if the Abbey kind of fell into disrepair?
Oh, definitely. The Abbey is, in a really practical sense, it's a place that's providing social services in West Central in a really like welcoming and low barrier way. It's also a historical building that's really beautiful and interesting and kind of anchors the neighborhood that it's in a way. Like it is, it's a landmark. So I think that that would be a tremendous loss if anything ever happened to the Abbey. It's also connected to a lot of the other organizations that are in West Central. So yeah, it's definitely a neighborhood hub.
I mean, there are places in West Central that are important, useful, and meaningful. The Abbey is one of the only ones that is all three. It's a working symbol, right? Like they're doing good work there. They're doing good work for the soul. They're doing good work for the bodies of the neighborhood and the population that they serve. Like the spirit that flows out of it comes back to it.
You know, it's fallen into disrepair before. And so I like to think human nature and the desire for connection would mean that it would come back in some other way. But it's got such good caretakers right now, and they care not just about their own particular faith and the space, but they also care about the neighborhood and the people around it.
I think on the one hand, a sacred place can be any place, right? Because God is everywhere. I think if I were to give someone a list of, like, here are Katie Shedlock's top five sacred places, they're all places where something meaningful really happened that helped me understand myself and the world in a different way. And I certainly hope that that's what happens here.
The reading will take place on Friday, February 6th at the Abbey. If you attend, just make sure to ask someone where the bathroom is.
That was Eliza Billingham reporting for Spokane Public Radio. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Department. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. KMUN News airs Monday through Thursday beginning at 7:59 a.m. and in the evenings beginning at 4:59 p.m. Go to kmun.org/news for podcast versions of the daily news and to read local and regional news stories. If you have a news tip or story idea, reach out to us. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, @kmun.org. That's all from us today. We'll see you tomorrow.